Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 43 on June 27th, 2019. On this episode, Rob Baker-Gall of Mr. Baker's Blog and Mr. Baker's Cakes joins me to talk about the ups and downs of digital media in the sugar arts world, from our own blogs and podcasts through to social media strategies for those looking to connect with others in this sticky, colorful world of ours. So whether you're up to your elbows in fondant as you listen, piping 10 million royal icing dots on a deadline, or using the dulcet tones of this podcast to help you fall asleep at night, as apparently some people do, let's get this show started to entertain and educate you on your sugar arts journey. Joining me now is award-winning cake artist and blogger Rob Baker-Gall of Mr. Baker's Cakes. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Okie dokie, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Well, I'm going to just jump in and say this, that you have the coolest name for a caker.
Well, thank you very much. And it's all real. I should tell you, the reason why I got into cake was because of my grandmother. I call her the original Mrs. Baker. She was one of those, you know, traditional English grandmothers, I guess, that you kind of think of, who always has something homemade whenever you go around and visit, whether it's a cake or some biscuits or something. And not only was she Mrs. Baker, but her maiden name was actually Mrs. Cook. So it's definitely in my blood.
Yeah, you were destined then. I don't even believe in destiny, but I do for you in this case.
Absolutely.
But do you also have a day job teaching?
Yeah, I am a primary school teacher. So I currently teach 6 and 7 year olds at a school in Portsmouth.
But I'd read that you will be changing is it September that you're going to be switching over?
It is, yeah. That's like hot off the press breaking news. Yeah, I am changing schools. So I'm moving to a school slightly further out of town, and I'm going to be going part time to allow me a bit more time for my cake adventures, I guess is the word.
Because you've been going to the shows and breaking into the YouTube video stuff.
Yeah, it's all been a bit crazy, actually. So for those people who perhaps haven't come across me before, I just started, like most of us do, making cakes for fun. And then kind of, it's been, what, I guess 5 years now. So over the last 5 years, things have just kind of snowballed, and it's got to the point now where just since February, I've gone to Wales, I've gone to Northern Ireland, I've gone up to Scotland, I've been in Germany, I've been over to New York, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to manage to be at school at 7 o'clock in the morning, Monday to Friday, and stay on top of making cakes and shooting videos and writing blogs. And yeah, it's all been a bit crazy.
So which do you think you're focusing on the most now between like the blogging and the making and the video? Which one's been taking most of the time?
Oh gosh, now that's a question. I have to say, I love cake because, I love baking. I've always loved baking. As you can probably gather, I started baking as a child with my grandmother, and it was actually when she passed away that I kind of got serious about it, because I had that whole, oh gosh, who's going to do all the baking now? And then I discovered cake decorating and cake art, which, as people will be able to see if they've seen my work, is something I absolutely enjoy. And I don't tether myself to one style of cake art either. I like to do a bit of everything. But I also like writing. Mm-hmm. And I've dabbled with blogs so many times, whether that was writing like a journal style blog back when blogging, you know, was the new black, and it was all Diary of a Cool Girl and Bridget Jones style blogging. And then I've had teacher blogs. And now, of course, I blog about cake. But YouTube is just something that I think is so accessible to so many people. And I've really enjoyed, I suppose, just getting to grips, having a play with it at the moment by shooting vlogs. But I've got huge plans for what I want to do with that as well. So I don't think I'll ever just pick one thing. It's about finding a way to make all of it work together,
right,
slightly more efficiently than it does at the moment.
Right. So by going to part time, then that's opening that.
I'm hoping that by being part time, I can have a set day of shooting content, which will obviously provide the videos. And while shooting that content, I will have made a cake, which will be me getting to do that side of things. And then, you know, I can write a blog about it as well. In my head, I'm going to work 3 days at school. I'm going to do 3 days of cake-related hijinks and leave myself with a day off, which has not really happened for about 2 years now.
I know that feeling. The only days off I get are the ones where I'm just too sick or too allergenic to do anything.
Yeah, I can relate, absolutely.
Like,
but then you say that, but I bet even then that's when you're messaging people and developing the links and arranging your next interviews and so on. So you're never really switching off, are you?
Well, honestly, when I'm really sick, at that point it's laundry, feed the kids, order a cotto. Like, even on my quote unquote days off I give myself when I'm sick, I'm still someone's mom.
Exactly. You see, I mean I can't lay claim to that, but there's always something, isn't there? And actually, as a primary school teacher, you have to be really, really sick to take a day off.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's more work to plan a day of lessons that somebody else is going to teach than it ever is to plan a day of lessons for yourself. So, do you know, half the time if I'm poorly, I'm like, do you know what, it's easier if I just go in.
Yeah. Like, my 6-year-old constantly wants to help me when I'm doing cakes, and I struggle between fostering her artistry, but also this is going to someone else.
Yeah.
And ew, no.
Do you know what? That is such a tricky thing. And I tell you what as well, being a teacher who is known for also being a baker at school, you know, the kids, they look at my cakes, some of them even watch my videos, and it encourages them to want to bake as well, which I absolutely love. But then, of course, they bring in the fruits of their labours. And you don't know.
No.
You don't. And it's such that's probably one of the hardest things, because you want to encourage them. And as I say, I absolutely love that I'm inspiring children to pursue hobbies outside of school. It is one of the most amazing legacies. But I don't want to eat it.
No, of course you don't want to eat it. When I was a kid growing up in Canada, there was a show called Just Like Mom. And it was like one of these game show things. It was actually super creepy now that we look back at it. Don't go looking at vids of it, because I didn't realize when I was like 7 years old how creepy the host was, like hugging the girls and kissing. It was like totally disgusting. But what I do remember positively was that they had the end of it was that you had to – the kids would all make something with the available ingredients – none of which matched, and the mom had to sample each of them and guess which her kid make. And so they would be like, well, my kid likes pickles, that's why there are pickles in this chocolate cake. So now I always have that in my head, that if like a kid is bringing me food that they've made, there might be pickles in this chocolate cake.
Yeah, I'm quite glad this show doesn't exist in the UK.
It was a long time ago. It was like, you know, 40 years ago, so it was a long time. But yeah, I mean, like, I like to teach kids too, and then I want them to go away and eat the stuff that they've been putting their I don't know how washed hands into.
Yeah, when I do baking with the children at school, I will do mine and they will do theirs, rather than us doing one together, as I know some teachers favour. And then that way, we can all try my one and they can take theirs home to mummy.
That's a good strategy.
Top tip.
Yeah. Do you get a chance to do it at the school a lot?
Do you know, when I first started at the school that I'm at the moment, so this was about 3 years ago, they had a school trip, a residential school trip that the children used to go on, but it is an inner city school, so not all of the children could afford it. So
right.
They used to do so all the kids who went on the trip obviously went off on the trip with one of the teachers, and then the other teacher would do a week of fun activities at school. And I think the year before I was there, the other teacher, so she took them for a picnic in the park, she took them to the cinema, all those sorts of things. And I was kind of like, well, I'm sure we could do better than that. And so I actually borrowed my friend Nicola's cake unit, so like she has a commercial bakery, for a week. And I took these 30 or so children down there every day, and we did we made scones, we made cupcakes, biscuits, celebration cakes, and then on the final day, on the Friday, we invited all the parents into school and served them afternoon tea with all the things that the children had baked. And that was absolutely amazing. But that was slightly older children than I teach now. I don't know if you could do that with six-year-olds. But it was the best experience, like combining basically my two passions. If I could do that all day, every day, then, you know, winner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was back when I lived in Austin. I don't know if you know Kyla Myers from the Austin Cake Show.
I know the name. I don't think we've met.
Okay, well, she and I, we had lots of grand plans and no time to do any of them. And one of the things that we thought of, that we actually sort of vaguely seriously poked at, was could we get some funding to set up a nonprofit school to teach, I mean, to largely like at-risk youth, but also just like anyone, you know, help. Those kids would be free, but then like other people could pay for classes to help fund it, to teach pastry arts, you know, cake decorating, et cetera, as fun, but also career paths. And we actually sort of poked, because at the time Jamie Oliver's foundation was doing a lot of stuff in the U.S. with sugar and stuff. And so like we were thinking healthy cooking too, but also, you know, cake is a valid dessert when it's time for dessert.
Absolutely. Everything in moderation.
Yeah. We sent some emails and never heard back. And also then realized, do we have time to do that? Like if someone had come back to us enthusiastically and said, yes, we will throw buckets of money at you, then we probably would have turned course and taken it. But yeah, there was just, you know, the funding. Where's the funding going to come from for that?
Exactly. This is the absolute worst time, whether in the States or in the UK, to be pursuing kind of new, like, charity or you know, government-funded initiatives. But
yeah,
it's so important. I mean, I've done, my mum's actually a community health worker, so she works in the community working with at-risk families and supporting people as part of her job with, you know, health eating. She's run groups like smoking cessation and AA style things, but also running workshops for people to teach them how to eat more healthily. And I went in as the guest chef a few times and did, do you know the TV show Ready Steady Cook?
Oh, that sounds familiar.
It's quite old school now. It's an old show now, but it might be repeated somewhere. But basically it would be two celebrity chefs and two members of the public, and the members of the public would arrive with a carrier bag of random ingredients, and then the celebrity chef would have to cook a three-course meal using whatever was in this bag. And it was hugely popular. It was on, I think it was on every day, actually, at one point. But that was kind of the idea that we used for this like community cooking demonstrations I used to do. So the people would bring an ingredient with them, and then I would cook something, and then everyone would sit down and have it for lunch, like collectively with all the other people who had watched. And it was amazing, you know, some of the fun we would have and some of the kind of crazy combinations. But as you say, something like that coupled with more formalized cake art baking, I love all types of baking. So savory baking could be incredible, but I can't afford it either. So
it's tell you what, the location.
You send some emails.
Yeah. We'll put out some all the people listening to the show, most of whom aren't in England anyway. send us your money too.
Perfect. Yeah. So my PayPal is.
Yeah, that's right.
For early adopters, we'll all get this pack.
That's right. Oh, but I mean, like, it's because it's the venue. Like here in Cambridge, there's a thing called Cambridge Food Cycle.
Okay.
I have a lot of food sensitivities and allergies, so I've never been to it, but a lot of my friends have been to it or even volunteered at it. And what basically they go around, they partnered with some local grocery stores to take the veg that would be thrown out tomorrow. And they take it that night and they cook whatever they can from whatever they've got. And then I think, not 100% sure about this, I will check and edit the podcast if necessary, but I think it's a donate what you will for the meal.
Quick note, I've Googled it. Go to foodcycle.org.uk to find out where they are all over the UK. And the meals are free. They would love donations, but you can go eat for free.
Okay, that sounds cool.
So that means, like, if you are someone who is in need of a meal, I don't think you pay. But if you're, like, you know, wealthy hippie and you just like supporting the eco cause, then you can donate. And, you know, it's the venue cost of having a place that's food safe, because that's a big one. Like, it's all well and good to say there are libraries or there are community rooms or churches, but if it's not a food safe place, there's a carpeted place or there's no sink, how do you set up something where we could teach random cake decorating or pie baking, or how to use your leftovers to make a pie that everyone can eat?
Yeah. And we have kind of like a very much instant gratification culture nowadays. So, yes, as you say, I think, what was your word? Eco-hippies.
There
will always be people who will support causes like this. But actually, to hook in the people that need this kind of help is the tricky part. Because, you know, why come and spend the day watching somebody make a soup out of a ton of, like, slightly rotten vegetables when I can get Deliveroo to bring me McDonald's in the comfort of my own home? And that's what we're battling against. I mean, just in my class, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, one Monday, I was, you know, trying to fill the few seconds before the lunchtime supervisor arrived to take them down to the dinner hall. And I was saying to somebody, oh, what did you do last night? And they were like, oh, we had McDonald's and watched a film. And I was like, oh, cool. Did you go to the cinema? And they're like, no, this was at home. And I was like, oh, did you go and get it? And they were like, no, we had it delivered. And I'll be honest, I don't eat fast food. I did not know that this was a thing that you could do now, have fast food delivered. Well, obviously, I know you can have some food delivered, but McDonald's, I didn't know you could have delivered now. And I was like, oh, right. And then somebody else, because they're six and this is what they do, was like, oh, we did that too. We did that too. Literally about half of my class had had McDonald's delivered the night before.
Oh, dear.
At the end of the day, McDonald's is cheap.
Yeah.
It's convenient. And now apparently you can have it delivered. Are you going to do that? Or are you going to cart your family of however many down to the local church hall where some random dude you've never heard of is going to teach you how to make a soup?
Yeah. Especially if you've worked two jobs all the day long and you just need your kids to eat.
Exactly. So it's, you know, it's a fantastic idea. But like most things in life, you won't ever reach the people that would really benefit from the support. It will be the people who probably don't need the support in the first place.
Yeah.
That's a very defeatist attitude, isn't it?
No, but it's realistic.
Getting cynical in my old age.
But it's true, because this is like, okay, I've lived here since 2014. When Kyla and I were talking about doing this, this was like, I don't know, probably between about 2011, 2012. It would have been before 2013 when my six-year-old came along. So, because when you have another baby, all ideas of random generosity, the community go out the window fast, because now you have a baby. But I think about this all the time. I live a very privileged life that I don't have to work for pay. I would love if the podcast made money, but it's probably never going to. I can do these things. I can be this volunteer, and I'm sitting here ready, willing, and able to do these things, but there isn't the infrastructure, and I don't have the political clout to make the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And how do we do that? Like, short of finding an angel investor like a Jamie Oliver or someone who really is passionate, how do we do that? Because I think it could really work once that wheel got greased in the first place, but I don't know where to find the grease.
And making it sustainable would be the other tricky thing, because again, even if you got private investment, it allows a company to tick that box of community cohesion, but it's not going to be beneficial to them long term. So it would have to become self-sustainable. So it's a bigger conversation, isn't it? But
yeah,
definitely a nice pipe dream to have. And even, as you say, from our position of privilege, perhaps something we can consider, you know, if you ever do make mega bucks from the podcast, and if, you know, people want to come and start paying me to do things on my blog, you know, welcome, then perhaps that's something, you know, we consider as a result of that. But I think the fact that these conversations are happening and the fact that people will now be able to listen to them is still positive. Because you never know, there might be that somebody somewhere who's like, do you know what? I could make that happen.
Yeah. I think we would have no trouble staffing such a thing. I mean, it wouldn't be in Cambridge, just because the audience relative to the real estate cost isn't, you know, it's not a good ratio. It'd have to be somewhere like London or Birmingham or somewhere like that, where there's more audience relative to the real estate. But I bet you if there was such a thing, I mean, let's face it, England's small. Speaking as a Canadian, we can drive it across pretty quickly. I think if there was the money to set up such a thing, we could get so many cake people who would volunteer. If just even each of them once a year, we'd have a full calendar.
Absolutely. I could probably list at least 20 of them now. So
yeah, it's totally feasible, except for the money problem.
Yeah.
Yep. Like so many things in the world.
Well, there you go. Well, again, when I become an international YouTube sensation, because that's on my to-do list.
Yeah.
then I'll make sure that that's something I get cracking on.
Yeah,
well, and I'll put you down for the first teaching spot, okay?
I am there with bells on, absolutely.
Excellent.
More about the YouTube and what you want to do and what you plan to get out of it and where are you going with that?
Oh gosh, do you know what, this is what this is, especially with going part-time at work, this is the question that everyone keeps asking me at the moment: where do you see it going? And I'll be honest with you, I have no long-term plans. My entire cake journey has been a whirlwind. I mean, 5 years ago this month, I had never decorated a cake. I had never used sugar paste or fondant icing. I purely was somebody who baked, and I baked for fun and I baked for my family. And then somebody said to me, one of my work colleagues, could you bake a frozen cake for my daughter? And I was like, no, I don't decorate cakes. And she was like, oh, but you're really arty. I think you'd be good at it. And so, you know, flattery gets you everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, why not? Let's give it a go. And being the sort of person that I am, I made a carved mountain with a homemade modelling chocolate castle on it. I bought an airbrush so that I could airbrush all of this stuff. I piped royal icing incredibly badly, but I did it. And suddenly discovered a gazillion new techniques overnight, and I was hooked. And then the next thing, after making a few more cakes, I entered a local bake-off in my town, a tiny little town in the middle of Southampton and Portsmouth, which I went on to win, which kind of got me noticed by the local cake people. And then they were like, one of them, Nicola, the woman I mentioned earlier who lent me her bakery, she was like, oh, you should check out this event, Cake International.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of my entrance into this world that, you know, you and I are in and that all of our friends are in. And then from there, I discovered collaborations, and I did the Sweet Summer collaboration with Isabel Tamargo, however many years ago that was now. And that kind of got my work noticed a bit more. And then I found myself attending the Cake Masters Awards, where I met these incredible cake artists who I'd never heard of because I was totally new at all this. My most embarrassing story, actually, is that at the Cake Masters Awards, I spent most of the evening chatting to Shauna McGreevy, and it wasn't until we were leaving and we walked out into the bright lights of the concourse and I went, oh my God, I know you. And she loves to tell people that story, which is great. And then, you know, roll on a couple more years and I suddenly find myself in this position where, you know, I am traveling to cake shows in Germany and in Northern Ireland, and I'm speaking to brands about going to the States, and ultimately I am still that guy at home in my kitchen experimenting with making these cakes. And that's kind of the mindset I'm still in. So when it comes to YouTube, for me it was just a natural progression on from the blog. Not everyone can access the written word. Not everyone enjoys accessing the written word. And I started watching YouTube just to be like, you know, is this something I could do? And I'd never really got the whole YouTuber thing. It wasn't something that I'd ever looked at. I'd never watched a YouTuber. YouTube for me was, you know, I need to see a tutorial on how to do this. I'll quickly find one, watch 2 minutes of it, and then log off and go and carry on. And I started watching, of all things, the beauty channels, you know, these beauty gurus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not an avid makeup user myself, but what I love about the beauty channels in particular, drama aside, is they have their niche, which of course is makeup. But they don't solely make videos about makeup. It's almost like a sub-community on YouTube where they have the overarching idea of makeup, but then there's these challenges, there's these viral fads that everybody has a go at, there's this collaboration between them all where they get together and do things, they try each other's tutorials. And I just suddenly thought, that could work really well in cake. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people like Zoe's Fancy Cakes making these incredible tutorials all the time, and I watch them avidly, and I bet there are people who are like, oh, but I could never do that. So would a video of somebody else who very much sees themselves still as a home baker slash cake artist having a go at it in front of them, would that make it more accessible? Obviously, at the moment, my content on YouTube is all just me going to events and kind of wandering around chatting to people because I didn't really have somewhere suitable for shooting that sort of content at home. But that's kind of almost just a practice. It's just getting to grips with editing. Right. While I work on a purpose-built studio, which we're doing at the moment, so that I can start to film this content that I have in my head that hopefully will be a cake version of this beauty guru subset of YouTube. So I don't know where it will go because I don't know if there's an audience for it. I don't know if it will have that mainstream appeal that I think it would need to be sustainable, because let's be honest, there are only so many cake people. There are also probably many other members of the public who might be interested in watching content like that, one would hope. But yeah, it's very difficult to say, oh yeah, in 3 years I expect to be doing this, and in 10 years I want to be doing that, because I don't know. It could all fail horribly and I'll be going back to school full time in September 2020. But I think my cake career seems to be on a bit of a crest of a wave at the moment, and I got to the point where I was like, if I don't do it now, then I'll miss the boat. Does right. that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. That's just as valid as saying, well, I've already scripted out 3 tutorials I'm going to do. I mean, because that is one way of doing it.
Scripts,
but
what are they?
Yeah, well, see, but that's the thing. I know some people who script out tutorials, they shoot 3 videos, realize it's really hard, and then you never hear from them again. So coming at it with a, well, I'm going to poke it from all the directions and see what I like, that is just as valid, because none of us know what any of this media is going to be in 2 years, 5 years,
exactly.
10 years.
And that's the reason why I've gone part-time. Besides the fact I love teaching and I think I'd be really cross with myself if I gave it up, I don't want to throw all my eggs into the basket of being this online cake personality, for want of a better word, and then the social media ship sails and the next thing comes along and you suddenly find yourself a dinosaur. And yeah. I think that's something that if I put my granddad head on for a second, that a lot of these young YouTubers, in inverted commas, haven't really considered. You know, yes, they're these huge personalities at the moment, but is this a sustainable business for them, these people who use it as their livelihood? You know, what are they going to do when the next thing comes along and they don't have transferable skills? And that's very much, actually, I say granddad, but that's my teacher head as well. You know, I have 36-year-olds telling me every day that they don't need to work hard at school because they're going to be YouTubers when they grow up. And, you know, that's all well and good, but YouTube might not even exist when they grow up.
Right. Well, this is the thing that I learned when I took my elder one to a women in engineering thing here at Cambridge University put on, and they were saying that for 5-year-olds right then, and my other one was 5 at the time when they said this, they said, for 5-year-olds right now, we can't train you for your job because it doesn't exist yet.
Yep, and when I'm at school, my subject specialism is computing and computer science. And that's one of the things that I kind of have to say to my colleagues all the time is, you know, yes, spelling is important, yes, handwriting is important, but actually, when these kids grow up, they won't ever write things by hand. I write by hand because I'm a teacher, so I write things at school. But if you ask me what I write by hand at home, I probably couldn't remember what it was. I scribble cake designs on the back of an envelope. Everything else is done on computer or on my phone or on a tablet. We don't write by hand, and yet as teachers we're so hung up on the idea of, you know, we have to teach children to read and write, and because that's what we've always done. Yeah. But the world has changed so much in the last 20 years. What's it going to look like in 20 more? Yeah, I'm a huge advocate for technology, but just like with ourselves, you know, I am a slave to my devices, and it's making sure you take that time to step away from them as well. And I understand the irony of being sat in my bed on a Tuesday evening being interviewed for a podcast on my iPhone.
Right, but when I did my journalism degree, nobody talked about podcasts. This wasn't a thing.
Absolutely.
We had text on the internet.
It amazes me that there are so many people who still don't know about podcasts.
I know.
I was talking at work today about, I'm recording an interview for a podcast this evening. And they were like, a what now?
Yeah, I know. It's the bane of my existence. Do you know how many K people don't understand? And I just want to tell them, guys, this is something you can have for free while you can. This is how I started doing it. I was listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and This American Life, you know, all these NPR podcasts, right? And then I was like, I want something for me that's about us.
Do you know what I love with a podcast is it's not as high commitment as watching a YouTube video. It's basically like, you know, we all have the radio on when we're in the car, for example, but the radio, you're relying on what they choose to play, whereas a podcast is, you can it's like choosing your own favorite radio show whenever you want to listen to it.
That's right.
And so, like, quite often I'll put something like Eat the Evidence or Susie Witt's podcast, something like that. They're perfect for winding down just when I'm going to bed. So just whacking them on my phone on loudspeaker and then, you know, lights off, snuggle down and just take it all in. And it's so much better than watching something on your screen where your mind's being all stimulated and everything, which keeps you awake. They're amazing. Everyone should listen, which is, again, a moot point because they are listening.
They're listening, right? Yes. I know, but it's a literal preach to the choir because I have this all the time because, and this is why it's an audio podcast. I'm aware of the irony of doing an audio podcast about a visual medium. And I really try to restrict how often I say, go look at the show notes. Because someone right now, I would hope, listening, is piping something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Someone else is literally elbow deep in making, like, a giant batch of colored fondant and wishing they had a sheeter and they don't have a sheeter, and we all are with you.
Yep.
Because, Yeah. You know, okay, you said that, and I have to go back to this thing that your first cake had modeling chocolate on it, because a few episodes ago, I can't even remember who was on. Someone and I were saying nobody starts with modeling chocolate. So apparently you are that unicorn who started with modeling chocolate. But you must have gone to the internet to
Absolutely.
Get that. Yeah. You couldn't have done that 15
Every
years ago.
Every single thing on that cake was botched by watching a YouTube video or reading a blog. And that's the other thing as well. Blogs. Why aren't people reading blogs? When you Google something, the top results are always, oh, this company, that company. They're all trying to sell you something. Scroll down a few, and there are blogs. And these are real people who are doing real things just like you. And you'll get the top tips, and they've tried and tested those recipes or those methods to death before they've dared put them on the screen. And if they haven't, scroll down a bit further, and you'll find the comments where people have corrected them.
Yep.
So I say that I'm entirely self-taught. I have now done some classes because, of course, part of what I offer online is reviewing classes. But everything else was just by watching YouTube videos, reading blogs, having a go and getting it wrong. And then talking about it online as well. That's the other thing. People need to be on Twitter. Cake people are not on Twitter. And I do not understand this because Twitter is by far and away the best social network for networking, and I've blogged about it so many times because it's immediate feedback straight away. You know, you put something up on Facebook and your friends see it.
Yeah,
that's lovely. But if you put something up on Twitter, everybody sees it. And I've had, like, you know, I'll go on there and be like, oh, I've tried doing this and it's not working, and some random person I don't know will come in and say, have you tried this? Because somebody else has retweeted it or someone else has commented it and it's popped up in their feed. And I've had so many amazing opportunities come through Twitter as well. But again, it's all about people you don't know discovering you through what you write because of hashtags. My appearance on the Great British Bake Off came through Twitter. My first experience of receiving PR from brands came through Twitter. Some of the most amazing cake people that I've met in real life came through Twitter. And yet cake people are just like, oh, no, I don't get Twitter. Crazy. People, that's your to-do list. Podcasts, blogs, Twitter. Do you finish with the fondant?
Yeah, right.
If you don't give it that time to develop those relationships and those followers, it is like you're walking into an empty room and shouting.
Yeah.
But if you didn't give it that time and join in with conversations on hashtags, then you won't build that following. And so it doesn't seem like it works, but actually, if you give it that time and you persevere with it, it is, as I've said, it's the best social network for networking, other than, you know, just spying on what your friends are up to and seeing pictures of cakes that thoroughly intimidate you.
Oh my god, that thing you just made? That was amazing! You are so good at this!
But it allows you to be whoever you want to be. So if you want to just be your business page, if you want to just be something else, it allows you to do that. It's not like Facebook where you have to, you know, your full name and your birthday and your profile picture is you, and you can make it work in the way you want it. I feel like I'm being sponsored by Twitter today.
Nobody's really sponsored by Twitter. We're not sponsored by anybody, and nobody is
Twitter. And it's a bone of contention for both of us.
Yes, because we would both like people to throw buckets of actual money at us instead of just another bucket of fondant. We like the fondant, but...
Although we do appreciate the fondant.
Yeah, we do.
You know, it does help, but it doesn't pay the bills.
No. Well, and that's part... I mean, again, none of us could have predicted... When I went to journalism school in the early 90s, none of this was even thought of. Let alone, I mean, nobody taught us then how to find sponsors, because you wouldn't have had to, because you would have a job at the CBC or, you know, NPR or BBC or whatever. That would be the plum job you'd get. It was the sales team's job to find ads.
Yep.
So we weren't trained in how to do that. And I find it incredibly uncomfortable to ask for things. I've had people in this business... Some of the, you know, brands that you would have heard of have people from there. I've met them and they're kind, and they've said to me, I'm not going to say who said this because I don't want everyone to go vlogging, but like a major guy in this business said to me, he liked what I'd done. He said, you know what? You're never paying for any of my products again. Anything you want, you ask for. I have never asked for anything because I can't, like, I feel like a jerk if I go up to him like, give me free stuff.
Do you know what? I'm exactly the same. And I know, like, there's this kind of perception that I get sent a lot of free stuff, and I'll be honest, I do get sent PR, I do get sent products to use and to review and to share, but a lot of what I do is also stuff that I've bought myself, because that's not in my nature. And I again, perhaps it's just my upbringing, but I was always told, you know, people who ask don't get.
Yeah,
that was one of my mum's favourite phrases, like, if you ask, you don't get. My response to her has since become, well, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. But, you know, I did a competition at Cake International in November last year, where people had to either find me or find one of my promotional flyers and take a selfie with it and caption it and post it.
Mm-hmm.
And they won. The prize was a big prize hamper, and loads of brands had pledged to donate prizes. And so, of course, I had to go around these brands collecting them, and I felt awful. And yet this is something that, you know, they'd reached out to me and said, yes, you know, we'd love to be part of this. And, you know, there were brands at the show who were like, what's going on? What's this about? Why haven't I been asked to get involved? And were just giving me stuff for this competition. And even then, when it wasn't for me, I felt awful, because it's just not in my nature at all.
It feels weird.
To go cap in hand.
I mean, because I did that contest, but I forgot. I talked to you at the show for this podcast, and it was only the next day I went, oh god, I forgot about his photo thing. And so I went, I think I took a picture.
You took a picture of, I think, wasn't it of my flyer?
That's right,
computer screen.
That's right. I think I was smiling beside it. Yes, I'd use like photo booth on the Mac to take a picture of the flyer the next day and be like, I'm in your cunt. And like, part of, but okay, even me doing that, I was like, I don't want to look like I'm sucking up for the prizes. I mean, because prizes are good, but also it's because I've just kind of recognized another fellow in this weird media cake business, and I really just wanted to support your thing. And so,
but it was noticed and it was appreciated. So
okay, that's
you.
Good.
And I'm sorry you didn't win.
That's fine. That's okay. Because I actually probably would have felt awkward if I had, because, again, winning's good, but that was not my primary goal.
I actually have to say that the woman who did win was someone who was really getting into Sugar Up with her daughter as well, and I loved that. It was something they could share together and have all these goodies to share together. So
that's good.
it was a really nice outcome.
Okay, but so how many people did you, like, roughly, did you get a good response from that?
I did, but the problem is, and actually this is something that happens quite often when I, because I obviously, again, because people send me stuff quite often, I do like to pass it on to my readers or to my subscribers. So I do quite often run giveaways, and a lot of the time, as with a lot of, I say brands, I'm not a brand, but you know what I mean, a lot of entities online, it's share this post and tag, But if your social network, favorite social network is Facebook, if you share something and tag the brand, we can't see it because most people's Facebooks are private. So you get the odd one, but actually, you know, I know there'll be loads of people who've like, oh, I entered your giveaway. And I'm like, that's great, but I can't see your entry. So I can't, you probably weren't in the pot of names for who could win. That's something I need to think about, actually. I've tried doing it where, you know, they comment on the blog itself or something. And that has worked sometimes, but it does make it difficult because I'd love for, you know, everyone to be able to join in. They don't have to be a blog reader or subscriber or what have you. And you don't want to restrict it to, oh, you can only do this if you're on Instagram. But no, I know there's been a lot of people that do miss out because they're sharing it on their Facebook page.
We were just talking on, was it Rosie's post? Rosie Mazumder from Cake Masters, that because you were saying that you'd shared that Simpsons thing about how you don't win the stuff, and I was like, but I've won the Cake Masters stuff 3 times, and she's like, well, we'll have to fix that, and I'm like, well, for more or less, and she said less, and I'm like, no, but I mean, that's partly playing the numbers.
That's a very, because I thought Rosie was being funny. I don't, things like that go straight over my head. I'm very dead.
No, she was kidding.
A lot of the time.
She was kidding,
but I think there's a big difference between, you know, Disney World can't sell these tickets anymore, so they're giving them away for free.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cake Masters magazine have got 10 sets of sugar shapers.
Yeah.
And I think it's using your common sense there. It's one of my silly bugbears that I shouldn't let get to me, but when I see, like, the Apple Store have got 10 iPads that they can't sell because they're open.
Yeah, that's a scam.
They open it when they give it to you, so that's not true.
No, it's no. I get the Facebook ads a lot lately, looking for women your age in your area to test and keep products. I'm like, no, you're not. You're lying. You're not giving me an Instant Pot. You're not giving me a car. You're not. I mean, those things do exist. And when I used to do the mama blogging, that is a thing. If you get deep into that world, you, again, like we were talking about, getting products to test, that is a thing that can happen. But it doesn't happen from a Facebook ad.
It really doesn't.
It really doesn't.
Speaking as someone who has worked with brands on product development, they reach out to you because they want your insights. They're never going to just put it out there on Facebook and be like, so we need some people to test some products, because of course, who wouldn't want some free stuff?
That's right.
It's work. You know, I worked with a brand last year who wanted a whole range that, you know, that was coming to market tested and troubleshooted before it came to market. And it wasn't something that I did as a review on the blog. It wasn't something that ever was public. It was something that was sent to me, and I used the products and I gave them some honest feedback, and then that was the relationship. But you know, it was a huge amount of work, and it was a huge undertaking, and I think people don't see that side of it. Actually, they don't. That's a really important point to cover, is that people don't always see the work that goes into, whether it's your podcast, it's my blog or my YouTube, or again, some of these what we would call like cake royalty, who we see having these amazing opportunities and experiences. There's a huge amount of work that goes on behind the scenes that I think just people aren't aware of. And I mean, perfect example of this is I did a road trip last summer where I basically spent about 10 days driving all over the country. And I went and I did a class at Renshaw Academy, and I went up to see Etty of Cake Duchess up in Glasgow. And while I was on the road, I judged the Manchester Bake Off. I can't even think what I did. I was in a different city every night. And people were like, oh, you're so lucky to have this opportunity. And I'm so jealous. And I was like, I'm staying in a different hotel. And some of them were pretty crummy hotels. Every single night, I've paid for the entire thing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the real reason for the tour was I was collecting pieces for a collaboration project. But people don't always see that side of it. They just thought, oh, look at Rob having this amazing time. And actually, of that 10 days, I probably spent a good 50% of it in the car driving. So I think it's important that people remember, I suppose, that at the other side of these amazing photos on Instagram or what have you, there are real people absolutely whacking their socks off.
Yeah.
It's very few, very lucky people in this life who get things handed to them on a plate. Everything else has, you know, it's been earned.
I'm going to say this cagily, so I'm not going to name the brand, but there's a brand that you and I have discussed before that it's a brand that we love with people that we love, and they've sent me samples to work with, and I've tried things and then mailed them back and said, okay, this didn't work for this reason. And then they've said, okay, right, we're going to fix that in the next generation. And I've done that over three generations of product. And you can say, well, I got all that free product. Okay, but A, what they don't know, because I'm not going to tell them this, is I've had to pay customs fees every time they send me stuff. Mm-hmm. So I actually have paid a ridiculous amount of money for product that is effectively test product. I paid for all the cake ingredients that was being tested on that product. And there's been no recompense other than the, I guess I've got the free product.
Which is out of date and had problems that you identified.
That's right. So now, I mean, and again, I love these people. That's why I'm being very cagey, because I don't want them to feel it all bad. Because I would happily do it again tomorrow if they sent me more, because I love them. I love what they're doing and I love the work, and I feel good being part of that. But it's not lucrative and it's a lot of work.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, we're not saying that it's horrible. We're not complaining at all.
No. I feel fortunate to be involved.
Exactly.
But it's not glorious.
It's work.
It is work.
You know, nobody has ever turned around to me and gone, we like you. We like your face. Have a ton of free stuff.
Yeah.
Because the world doesn't work that way.
No.
Even when I do, because I have a PO box. It's on my blog. It says, send me mail. And I love it when people do, but a lot of the time it's a transactional relationship. They're sending me that product because either they want me to do something for them, whether that's test it and give feedback, or because they know that if I use it and I write about it, that's advertising.
Yeah.
And effectively free advertising to a target demographic that, you know, there's no targeted ad on Facebook that is ever going to reach however many hundreds or thousands of cake people mm-hmm. who are going to definitely be interested in that product, like having a cake person who writes a blog about cake write about that product. Again, so yeah, people think, oh yeah, it must be nice to get all this stuff. But actually, one of the things that keeps me awake the most at night is thinking about the pile of stuff that I have to do something with so that I can write about it or film with it or something before, you know, the world has moved on and that product is no longer new and exciting and innovative.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's not all sunshine and lollipops.
No. And, okay, to some extent, cake tool makers have a problem with this. And this is something I've talked about with other people who know about marketing in past episodes, is the cake manufacturers are very bad about how to launch things with social media. They're not giving us stuff 6 months in advance so we have time to prepare it. They're giving it to us on release.
Yes.
And
yes.
They.
Yes, yeah.
And we're like, no, I've already committed to my next 6 months of stuff. So, and I'm perpetually behind in everything. So if a, let's say, brand that I love tomorrow handed me something and said, please, please, please do a blog post on this, like, I would have to set a lot aside to be able to do that, timed with their launch date of last week.
Mm-hmm.
So the brands, people, if you're running a brand, if you are listening to this, if you want us bloggers and vloggers and podcasters and stuff, we want to help. You need to involve us in your earlier, you know, production cycle.
Yeah. It needs to be part of the marketing strategy, not as an afterthought, doesn't it? You know,
yeah,
it's not, oh, we've got this product, how can we promote it? It's, right, okay, so this product is coming up for launch. We've used these people before. Let's reach out to them and let them know in advance. And I tell you what, press releases, even if you can't have your hand on the product in advance, knowing it's coming and knowing what it is that, you know, I've been sent stuff before and I'm like, okay, so as you say, now I need to set things aside because I need to make a cake for this, or I need to sculpt something for this because I need to be able to use this tool, or
yeah,
and at least knowing the nature of the product in advance
Right.
Would be a huge help, because I know, again, I'm not going to name names, but there is one brand who I know is going through a rocky period at the moment. And so when they reach out and ask me to work with them, I'm always super keen to help, because I know that they're a brand that's really dear to a lot of cake people here in the UK. And they'll be like, oh, we've got some new products coming out and we'd really love for you to try them. Is it okay if we send them over? And I'm like, okay. But they won't tell me what they are. And the first I know is when I open the package. And then I'm like, oh, gosh. And there's one that arrived, it's probably nearly a month ago now, but I can't think of how to use it in a way that ties in with the content I've already got lined up.
Right.
And so I'm like, it's just that there. And again, it's something that keeps me awake at night, because I'm like, if I don't get to this soon, people are going to be like, well, that's been out for ages.
Right. And it's so, the cake world, yeah, that's bad about this, because, again, because I've done publishing in other sectors, right? And even the books that I've had reviewed, you know, sent to me, review for my blog, they're pre-production books. I'm often getting even a pre-edit, which I'm then, yep, fair about how I you know, comment on it, or getting galleys or whatever. The book industry knows that they have to have all this stuff lined up before the launch, and often they'll make you sign the NDA or whatever to say that you can't talk about it before. And that's fine. We will do that. We will work with you, but yeah, you can't send us something on the week of launch and expect us that we can drop everything and make the mermaid cake for your mermaid mold this week.
And you're right with books as well. Books are such a tricky one too, because not only do you have to come up with this project, and shooting a video is the hardest, because of course it's not just I need to make this, but I need to set aside sufficient time to make this on film.
And edit it.
And edit it. All in time for getting it up within a certain period. But with a book, you have to read the book first. Uh-huh. If it's a book of tutorials, if you're going to attempt a tutorial from the book, you have to source all the materials, yep, that you'll need to make that tutorial. It's such a huge undertaking. And I mean, I have to say, I'm quite lucky in that most of the books that I've been sent recently, I've had in advance, so I could do that. But there's been a couple that have come out recently and I'm like, I literally cannot do anything with this book,
yeah,
because it's going to take so long. I mean, flower books, that's my favorite. I don't even really make sugar flowers. I'm totally ham-fisted, and I haven't got the right delicate touch for sugar flowers, but I've been sent a lot of beautiful, beautiful sugar flower books, and I just think to myself, the cost to me of buying the tools that I would need to make some of these amazing projects,
yeah,
it just isn't feasible at all.
For those of you who are actually working on a project right now, you're deep into it, you're working really hard, I want you to pause for a second. I want you to sit back, close your eyes, take a deep breath. No, come on, do this with me now. Sit back, close your eyes, deep breath. Working really hard. Stuff may not always be going well. Maybe stuff is going great. Whatever's happening, I want you now to slowly open your eyes and look at what you've made. Okay, maybe it's still got some problems. Maybe you're not done. Look at what you've made. You're so good at this. You are going to rock this cake. You are so amazing, and I have faith that you're going to get this done and everyone's going to love it. Thank you.
But I tell you, I do enjoy reading them still. I just think one day I will set aside like a month where I will just work my way through all these beautiful books.
Well, actually, that's one of my plans this summer. It's why I've actually taken a few episodes off, and I've sworn off no baking this summer for I don't care who asks. Because for the last two summers and all those heat waves, I was donating baking to my WI or to the school or both, and it always came in one of those heat waves where I had to make like 250 cookies to teach a cookie class at a WI, and then it's, you know, 35 degrees Celsius outside, and so it's 50 degrees Celsius in my kitchen, and I was physically breaking. My skin could not take it. It was bad. So I said, no baking this summer. And for myself, my family, right? But you know what I mean? Like large-scale baking that's going out of that. No 200 cookie batch things. No three-tiered cakes. None of that nonsense.
I wish I'd taken that advice.
Well, and so...
But what I'm doing this summer, Cake International have teased it already, but I'm part of a group that's doing one of the big collaboration displays at Cake International again.
Oh, yeah, okay. They've been teasing them, yeah.
It's the Santa's Grotto display.
Right.
And I am making a life-sized Santa Claus, Father Christmas, and you'll be able to sit on his lap.
Oh, my goodness. That's structure.
Mm-hmm. So that's my summer. And there's been a very lovely lady from the British Sugar Craft Guild who's been on at me to come and demonstrate at their one of their regional meetings. And so in addition to making the life-size Father Christmas and a few other collaborations that I really should do during the school holidays rather than leaving them until the last minute, as is my way.
That's all of us.
I'm now also going off to the other side of the country to teach at the British Sugar Craft Guild as well, which is quite exciting.
That's cool.
But yeah, so while you're having your... You're a nice, relaxed summer.
Well, no, I'm not going to... It's not going to be relaxing. What I'm going to do is use half the tools that I've bought. I bought a bunch of, like, cheap little cake card, like, cookie size. So I can practice piping.
Oh,
and I
yes.
can practice, like, Valerie and Christina, they're all the things they're doing with buttercream where it's basically, like, the palette acrylic painting.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that this summer with melting nice. Buttercream because it's going to be stupid hot in here. But you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm going to – and I'm going to work on my fiction because I've got readers who've been saying, it's been 4 years and you promised. I'm like, all right. But we'll bring back some good – feminist romance for my readers, but that's a whole different kettle. But yeah, so it's not that I'm taking the summer off. It's that I've decided, and I've all, because this is also the year that I'm doing no competitions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I decided after CI last year, I was like, you know what? I'm burning out on this and I need to stop before I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting frustrated and I'm starting to feel like cranky about competitions and that they're taking up too much time. So I'm taking because it's coinciding with not being able to go to Austin while I'm on boycotting US travel for political reasons. Right. So while that's all going on and it's inconvenient for me to do competitions anyway, I'm no competitions. I'll take some podcast episodes off and I'm going to work on some skill building this summer.
And that's great because I think, again, that's something that's really important for people to understand is that we're all still learning all the time. I've certainly never made a life-size cake that you can sit on before. So there will be a lot of learning happening there. And I would love to learn how to pipe cookies. It's definitely one of my bucket list items.
Well, and that's what I've been playing with. So, yeah, I mean, like, I'm not going to even bake the cookies. That's why I'm saying I got some cards.
Nice.
Yeah, because then I can also, like, if something works really well, then I have it in a stable, long-term format, especially if it's royal or whatever, and maybe I could even do a class on it, and I've already got the demo made.
Perfect.
That's now, see, this is a really good plan.
It is a really good plan, and do you know what? I think that's, again, something that we lose sight of when we're so busy with the, I say the commercial side of cake, but it's not, because again, I don't make any money.
We're not making money.
But, you know, I got into cake because I enjoyed it and I liked it. And I do still kind of keep my hand in that with collaborations and, you know, making cakes for my friends. Although half the time I do palm them off with something that I made to use a tool or a product or something. But they don't know that. And they hopefully won't listen to this podcast.
No.
But it's actually taking that time for yourself and to rediscover, you know, what originally attracted you to cake decorating and cake art. And I don't think competitions let you do that, because part of that journey of discovery and learning is making mistakes.
That's right.
You know, that's a message I teach my children every single day at school, is that learning is a series of mistakes.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with competition pieces.
No.
You know, no judge is interested in how you place the, you know, a certain element to cover up something you did wrong.
Right.
And I think, you know, it is important to allow yourself that time to just do it for yourself.
Right. And that's the Eat the Evidence ethos. That's the entire point of this whole, when I started the blog and named it that, and then coming to this, is that everyone should, you know, who's interested, should have a play with edible media. And if it all goes catastrophically wrong, eat the evidence. No one needs to know.
Do you know what? And I never knew that.
Yep, that's what it's about, because I teach kids and I teach beginners and I teach my WI and I teach people who are never going to sell a cake, who don't have it in their head that, well, I better do this properly or else, you know, the judge at this, you know, prestigious cake show is going to know that I didn't do this very well. People who don't even have that in their heads are actually my primary, you know, who I teach.
And I think that's awesome. And I love that too. I think the biggest thing for me with all the stuff I put online in terms of recipes and tutorials is it's for those people who were me 5 years ago, who were like, oh, I really want to have a go at this.
Yeah.
And they search and they Google and something comes up and then they find it. And that's what helps them get to where they want to get to.
Yeah.
Because do you know what? There are so many amazingly talented cake artists out there who are producing online content. I've mentioned Zoe, I've mentioned Susie Witt, so many people producing amazing, like super high quality tutorials. But you know, if you look at mine, it's how to make edible sand, it's how to do a wood effect cake board. I think one of my most recent recipes was how to make a box mix cake not look like a box mix cake,
right?
And things like that, because that's what, you know, the normal people want, the cake muggles.
Yep.
And so, yeah, definitely.
I mean, I'm halfway through a tutorial, which I hope to finish today, and then I had to take an allergy pill instead. So, yeah. So, but I'm halfway through a tutorial. I did some cookies back in February, so that's how long this took, where I accidentally came up with a way to make a really cool little lunar surface. And it's, like, dead easy and cheap. And so, like, I'll just quickly describe it, because hopefully before this even goes out, I'll have the blog post up. But basically,
perhaps you need to rephrase it, then you need to re-record yourself saying, "So I've just released this."
Yeah, so I've just released.
Tutorial.
Yeah, that would be hard. So there's a constant time lordiness to the podcast because it takes me time to edit it. But so all you do is do you know how to make your own sanding sugar?
I probably have a YouTube video saved somewhere.
Okay, so basically, like, because you can buy sanding sugar and it'll be more consistent, but you can just take, like, put some, if you want it big and sparkly, put granulated. If you want it small and sparkly, put castor in a baggie or a tub. I used to use baggies, which is slightly easier, but I'm trying to be more eco-friendly, so now I use a tub. And you put a drop of whatever gel color. It has to be gel, not liquid, right? Obviously. And you put that in there, and you just massage it in. Now, you're not going to get a full, perfect, uniform color like you would if you bought the sanding sugar, but that's part of its charm, is you get kind of a, almost like an ombre version.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, you can just, like, you can make as much as you want in whatever color you want, and it's as cheap as the sugar and the two drops of color.
Awesome.
Which, compared to the price of sanding sugar at its full price, is, and it's, you have it now. You don't have to wait for it to arrive or be the wrong color. So it's fast and easy. So.
And it doesn't clump at all with gel?
A little bit, but you massage it through.
Okay, because I think I have done it before, but I think I use powder.
You could use powder too, but I just don't have that many powder. Well, I have a bunch of roll cam powders. Those aren't doing me any good now. But I tend to use mostly Americolor gel because that's just what I like, what I started with. So what I did was I had it was about a half cup to a cup worth of, like, American measuring of castor sugar, and I put one drop of America Super Black in it, and I just massaged it through with my fingers, and, you know, like, my fingers got black, but whatever, I'm a cake decorator, my fingers are always like that. So, like, and I massaged it through, and it created sort of like about five tones of gray, sort of mixed, very granular. Then I flooded a cookie with some gray royal icing and sprinkled the sanding sugar on top and waited about 5 to 10 minutes. It's going to depend on your humidity. And then I took the back of the, you know, my needle tool, which I helped the flooding with, and I just did the rounded back, and I just went, you know, dent around and made some craters, and then it dried like that, and it totally looked like a sparkly lunar surface.
Awesome.
Cheap, easy, fast, forgiving. Like, what more do you want? And then, like, everyone who saw these cookies was like, oh my god, that's amazing, and then they loved the taste, too.
Perfect.
That's right, completely well, winning. But yeah, tomorrow, hopefully, with the rain, hopefully it won't be as bad allergies tomorrow, and I will, that's my goal, is to have that post up tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, I will look out for it for definite. Because, as I say, cookies is definitely something I want to do more of. Because I watch every video that goes up, like Sweet Ams and yep. That other one begins with H.
Haniella.
Yes, I watch everything they do, and I'm like, oh my god, I'd love to do that.
Do you watch Julia Usher?
Who has the time?
Do you watch Julia Usher videos?
Yes.
Because, like, they're the best in the world, and she does, like, 10 million dots, and I'm like, my hand would fall off.
I'm working on a collaboration piece at the moment, which is going up this weekend, which tells you how late I am with it. I think it was due 2 weeks ago. It's a pop art style image that I've hand drawn with edible markers, which I was sent by Fractal Colors, because everything I do has to use a product so that I can talk about the product.
Right.
And even then I managed to screw up the dot work, so I don't even try it with royal icing. As I say, I'm just ham-fisted. I get really into something and I'm like, oh, I should really let this dry now, but actually I could just do this bit, and then and suddenly I've made a whole cake in like an hour at 5 o'clock in the morning before school.
Yeah, that works
out because I'm in a rush.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, but okay, so you've talked a lot about Twitter, so say your Twitter handle.
Okay, so on Twitter I am at Mr. Baker's Cakes. And in fact, all my social medias are at Mr. Baker's Cakes, with the exception of Snapchat, which I have no idea how it works, which is at Mr. Baker's Blog, because I'm having a bit of an identity crisis at the moment, whether I should be Mr. Baker's Cakes primarily or Mr. Baker's Blog primarily.
Right.
The YouTube is Mr. Baker's Blog, and obviously the website is Mr. Baker's Blog. But if you Google some combination of Mr. Baker Cake Blog, everything comes up. I'm infinitely Googleable.
And I'll link to everything in the show notes, too. So that'll be all the links for all your stuff that I can find. And people should subscribe, because it is important to you as a YouTuber that people subscribe.
It really is. Really, really is. Because if I get to 1,000 subscribers, I can do silly things like put live links and open myself up for advertising, which means people would actually pay me.
That's
for
right.
Making my videos, you know, which is the dream. So definitely subscribe to YouTube and definitely subscribe to the vlog, because as of July, when I go part-time, I'll be going back to my regular posting cycle, which from memory is every Tuesday there will be some new original content, whether that's a recipe, a tutorial, a guest tutorial, or an interview with one of our favourite cake artists. Every Thursday, the plan is that there will be a new video, and every Sunday we'll go back to having a weekly issue of my online magazine, Something Sweet, is the plan.
That's really cool. And people should subscribe to these things, because you do a lot of giveaways.
I do a lot of giveaways, and it's thanks to a lot of very generous people in the cake industry as well. So there are generally, you know, we're not giving away like, oh, I've got one pot of Bluster Duster. They're usually pretty substantial prizes, so definitely worth getting involved.
Yeah, and you should totally go enter and subscribe to all his stuff, because it's good stuff, and there's fun stuff that you can win, and, you know, the profiles of the other bakers are, and decorators are really cool, too.
Oh, thank you.
It's a great blog. I read it. I do.
Well, I like it. I do think that cake can be a very lonely pastime, and I just think that, you know, we go months and months at a time without seeing our cake chums. And I think it's just a really nice way to kind of bring everything together, bring what people are doing, what people are making, sharing people's news all in one place so that you don't miss it with the Facebook algorithm or what have you. It's just, it's there. And equally, actually, you know, if people are working on an exciting project, or they've got a new tutorial, or they've got an idea for a tool, or anything that they want to share with the cake community at large, then do get in touch with me as well. If you go to my blog, all my contact links are there. I, you know, you can email, you can message, you can even send me post if you want to, and let me know what you're doing, and I'll make sure that I get out there and share it and celebrate it as well, because my blog is definitely at its best when I'm getting lots of contributions from other people, because I can only do so much myself. When it's lots of people getting involved that it's really great. So yeah, I hope I'll hear from some of you very soon.
Yep, and it's very validating and makes you feel good when someone blogs about the stuff you're doing. So people should submit their stuff for your blog, and then it's just nice to see your stuff up on someone else's page, because then you see a new group of people praising you, not just your friends who you start to wonder if they're praising you because they're your friends.
Definitely, and I'll be honest as well. Been some like amazing success stories as well, just when I've had people that perhaps I've read at a show have done something and I've shared it on my blog, and then I've had like Cake Masters magazine, I've put artists in touch with them and they've gone on to do tutorials for them. There was another person that had, you know, she was just quietly making things at home herself, and then I saw some of them on Instagram and I shared them, and now she's very much become this huge part of the Cake International scene as well. And so, you know, if you feel like you are very much out there on your own and you see this cake world and you want to get into it, then, you know, get in touch, and, you know, I can introduce you to some people and set you on the path.
Yes,
it's a crazy world, but it is a fantastic world. And you know what, there are some incredible cake people. I always say, choose your circle for people that are going to encourage you and support you, and I know a lot of amazing cake people who would do just that. So yeah, come and join our crazy family.
That sounds awesome. Well, okay, I will let you go get some rest, and thank you so much for being on.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been an honor.
And I look forward to seeing you at CI, where we might have some cool plans if we ever get time to think about them.
Yes, and if I ever get away from Father Chris.
Well, I'm going to come see your Father Christmas. That's good. Yeah, we're putting that on the podcast.
You, I don't plan to spend any. I did one showpiece where I spent the weekend, stood with it, and I hated it. It was so boring. So my plan is very much deliver him, and then he is somebody else's problem. So. Yeah.
That's the spirit of Christmas. Okay. Well,
you take care, hon. And again, thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
All right. It's been great having you on. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
And one final note. The tutorial about using royal icing and sanding sugar to make a rocky lunar surface I mentioned is actually done and up. And you can find it on the Eat the Evidence blog, and there'll be a link to it in the show notes for this episode as well. This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Choosing your own favorite radio show whenever you want to listen to it.